Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning filling in for the big man, and I am now joined by Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show from 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves every weekday morning. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, Connor.
Memphis basketball, 5 quad 1 wins already this season, and it's only December 17th. They've had a lot of early season success, and I understood that a lot of people came into this season with some cautious optimism about this team, but it did seem like because of how last season went, people were going to be hesitant to really believe in the success of the Memphis Tigers. After the win against Clemson, do you think it is safe to truly believe in this Tigers team yet?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think I don't think sports is safe. Like, I think sports is totally designed to crush your heart. Like, look at the Detroit Lions, right? And I say this as a Bills fan and thrilled that my Bills beat the Lions, but, and who knows, maybe the Lions can survive their injuries, but they have such just, this is their dream. It felt like their dream season and such horrific injuries that I don't think it's ever safe to trust anything in sports. I think the act of being a sports fan, it's a little bit like being in love. You just sort of trust, right? And I do think, and as Penny talked about last night at his radio show, that now would be the time to get yourself to FedEx Forum. Sorry, the dog's barking. This is my dog. This is a neighbor's dog. But anyway, this is the time to get to FedEx Forum and support the team. I think I believe that. You know, I think they have certainly shown that they are worthy of belief, and they fight like hell. They're down by 6 to Clemson with 2 minutes left. They're down by 5 with just a little more than a minute left. They come back and win. I mean, we've seen it time and again. And you're looking at, obviously, Virginia this week on the road, but then the home game against Mississippi State, the home game against Ole Miss, these are terrific games. People complain all you want about the schedule and the conference and the home games, and that's an excuse or even a reason for both football and attendance being down. But now you have these two terrific games, rivalry games against two teams that are in the top 25. I think Penny's asking for people to believe, and I think that's a worthy cause.
Yeah, you know, I don't blame Penny Hardaway at all for trying to plead to Memphis Tiger fans to fill up the FedEx Forum, and I just got done talking to Christian Fowler about this. I tend to think that it has more to do with the schedule and the teams that have been in the FedEx Forum so far this season rather than people not wanting to support this Memphis Tigers team, because as you and I have talked about a few times, we talked about it last week with Memphis football, this is one of those cities where people have to pick and choose where they spend their money. And when it's Arkansas State in the building or Louisiana Tech in the building, I think that people are just hesitant to go out there on a rainy, cold night when they can just stay home and watch the game on their couch.
I think it's both things. In other words, if this had been Penny's first year when the enthusiasm was high, mm-hmm. right, it wouldn't matter who they were playing. They'd be in the building, right? If this had been Cal's triumphant years when they're going to Elite Eights and ultimately a Final Four, it wouldn't have mattered who they're playing. People would have been in the building. So I think it's a combination. I think what you're seeing is the season ticket base has fallen off because of the it's dwindled over the course of Penny's tenure here because he hasn't delivered, honestly. Like, sure. He hasn't delivered on – there was a lot more excitement. Hell, they used to have Memphis Madnesses, and I don't miss it. But the reason they had Memphis Madnesses is because there was such enthusiasm to see that team early, you know, before the season even began. Well, now there's not a lot. Like, so I think some of it is there has been a chipping away in belief and in enthusiasm because of the lack of success. And then you're right, in terms of what's going to inspire people once the season begins, no one's going to look at the schedule and say, God, I really got to get down there to see him play Arkansas State. Now, I do think, you know, a test for this will be Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Now, I suspect there's going to be some, you know, a healthy number of Ole Miss fans and a healthy number of Mississippi State fans in the crowd for that, in the FedEx Forum for those games, because those teams also off the promising starts. And so, and I do think then that's the moment when, if you've been wondering, when should I, you know, jump back on the Memphis bandwagon, you will literally not have better games in FedEx Forum for the Tigers than these next two. You know, this is it. This is as good as it gets. So if you're going to go to a game this year, more than any conference game, this game against Mississippi State and this game against Ole Miss, like, this is as good as it gets. And so we will see. Certainly the schedule rationalization or whatever won't work given the way those two teams are playing and the rivalry aspect of those games.
Tyrese Hunter right now is ninth in the country in three-point percentage at 51.6%. I don't expect him to shoot 50% from three the entire season. I have said if he does that, we need to go ahead and give him a key to the city because he will be a Memphis hero for all time. Right now, he is third in the nation with players at least 60 attempts. You have Kobe Rogers. He's 44th in the country among D1 players in three-point percentage at 44.6%. And then you have P.J. Haggerty at 39%. Have you been surprised by the Memphis Tigers' three-point shooting attack this season?
Of course. Of course we have. You know, I stunned. And I don't think you'd be stunned by Kobe Rogers because this is what he does, right? This is why you bring him in. This is his track record. And so, 100%, like, this, if the idea that he's going to hit three-pointers at an impressive clip, well, that's fine. That's the skill set. It is aberrational for the other two. Now, is it growth? Is it a heater? The truth of the matter is, if you want to be skeptical, and I don't think anyone should be skeptical of the Tigers right now, I do think one of the things you can scratch your head and wonder about is, can they really hit three-pointers? Like, particularly those two, particularly Tyrese Hunter, honestly. Can he really hit three-pointers at this pace? Because that's been a key to them being this good, right? Like, that is why they have been this good, is because we heard it, you know, from the Clemson head coach, elite shot makers. Is he going to continue to be an elite three-point shot maker? At some point, I think you just have to say, okay, maybe that's what's happened. Maybe that's what he's become. And I also think you have to give Penny credit. I do think that one of the things that Penny does on offense is players don't look over their shoulder. You know, they back in the old days when there was a deep rotation, they'd look over their shoulder if they screwed up defensively or if they didn't give effort or whatever else, they'd be yanked. But Penny has never really, you know, sort of micromanaged offensively. He lets players ball, you know, and I do think, in addition to just maturity and continuing to work on his game and everything else, I think one reason that Tyrese Hunter might be playing with this level of confidence is that Penny imbues players with this level of confidence.
Transitioning to Memphis football, they do have a bowl game tonight against 6-6 West Virginia. Right now, Memphis is a 4.5-point favorite. Before the game, I've been talking to people about Seth Hennigan and the legacy he is going to leave at the University of Memphis. And I understand that they haven't won a conference championship. Ryan Silverfield actually had recent comments about winning a championship where he apologized to the fan base, but he did point out that they do have a wonderful opportunity to get their 11th win on the season. How do you think Tiger fans are going to view Seth's career when it's all said and done?
Oh, I think that sort of hays in the barn. They're going to think of him as an incredibly effective quarterback over 4 years, and the most he will be celebrated for his loyalty, right? Which is great. He would rather, I'm sure, be celebrated for a title, right? For leading the team to a championship. But I do think that in this day and time, when players, I mean, what right now, the backup, and I don't even blame the Penn State backup quarterback, they're in the playoff and the backup quarterback has entered the portal, right? So that's the world we live in, and Seth Hennigan stayed here for 4 years. And I think that is remarkable. And throughout that period, he was an excellent quarterback. Is he going to be as beloved as the players that delivered championships? As the quarterbacks that deliver championships? No, he will not be. But I do think, by the way, that to me, and obviously, bowl games outside of the playoff have become increasingly meaningless. I would make the argument that the results of this game in some ways are less important than any game that Memphis played all year. Right? Like if they'd lost to North Alabama, that would have been cataclysmic. Mm-hmm. If they lose tonight, whatever, they lose, right? But there is, in this world when bowl games mean nothing, I do think there is something at stake here for Memphis in particular. A, sending Seth out on the right note. That's clearly Seth and the seniors. B, the 11 wins. But to me, even more than the 11 wins, if they win tonight, they will assuredly be they will finish the season in the top 25, the end of the season, top 25. They have only done that three other times in their history. And I think, you know, this isn't they were in the top 25 after the third week. They were in the top 25 after the eighth week, and then they dropped out. This is looking at your full body of work for a complete season. What were the 25 teams that deserved to be recognized in the top 25? And the Memphis Tigers will be one of them. I think to go ahead and cement a top 25 ranking, I think that is a real accomplishment. It's not winning a conference title, which they or getting to the conference championship game, and that is disappointing. But in the end, and it's also not just counting wins over crappy teams, right? It's not like stacking up crappy. It's about end of the season, you look back, who are the 25 best teams in the country, and the Memphis Tigers will go down in history as one of them. I think that's worth playing for tonight. It's another reason I expect them to come out motivated and expect them to win.
I agree. I think that it is possible to hold space for both feelings of being a little bit disappointed that they didn't make it to the American Championship or win the American Championship, but at the end of the day, back-to-back 10-win seasons is a big deal, and they have a chance to get their 11th win, send the seniors out the right way, and get some momentum back in the fan base. I think it's a little bit different because last season you had all this momentum on the field with returning players and things like that. I do think, though, a win tonight against a power school would get some fans back on board and excited to see where they could go next season. One thing I know that you're excited about, though, is the play of Josh Allen the last few weeks. I'm not sure if you've seen this stat, but since he got engaged during that bye week, I'm going to read off what Josh Allen has done. It may actually be the best thing that has ever happened to the Bills in recent seasons. He has 14 touchdowns, 1,300 yards, 0 turnovers, and 0 sacks. Josh Allen has turned into Superman since he got engaged.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't, much as I believe in the power of love, I don't attribute much of it to the engagement. it's interesting. Like people who've believed in Josh Allen for a long time, it's you've lived with this sort of skepticism about him that there hasn't really been even about other quarterbacks who haven't won Super Bowls, about Lamar or about Joe Burrow, or like it doesn't, with Joe Burrow, it's only health related, right? So it's interesting now to see the whole world coming to sort of acknowledge what a Superman he is. I mean, I heard Mike Greenberg the other day saying that he is literally playing quarterback better than anyone has ever played quarterback. And that doesn't mean that he's been better than, you know, in winning championships than Brady or anything else. But over these last few weeks, and honestly through the length of this season, it's eye-popping. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like, even the first two drives against the Lions, you come out against the Lions, and you're on the road, and you've just lost to the Rams. And a couple of those throws where he's rolling right, he's creating the angle to hit the running back, and then he's throwing it on a line across the field 30. It's just incredible. Like, it's not just efficient execution. It's an eye-popping level of physical talent and then being in complete control. It's really been astounding. Does that mean they're going to win the Super Bowl? Probably not. Like, only one team does, and so probably not. They have a chance as long as he's playing at this level. And I do think that he is now, I'm still not going to say locked it up, but I do think he is the overwhelming favorite at this point to be MVP, and should be.
Overwhelming. I'll take that. I'll take that instead of saying lock it up. Well, Jeff Calkins, thank you so much for joining me.
See you, Kenneth. Yep, bye.
That was Jeff Calkins. He is columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single morning from 9 to 11 a.m. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. When we come back, we have to talk to DeMichael Cole about the Memphis Grizzlies, and I got to ask him about the Memphis media basketball accusations he's been throwing out there on Twitter. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on 929 FM ESPN.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for the big man while he is out. I am now joined by the Grizzlies beat reporter for the Commercial Appeal and co-host of Locked On Grizz. He is also the self-proclaimed best hooper in Memphis media. You can find him on Twitter at DeMichael C. DeMichael, when is this game going to happen?
Connor, you're stirring the pot already, man. You're stirring the pot already. I finally got the people to calm down, get off of me a little bit, and you about to get them back riled up. But you know, we're putting something together. It's something in the works. We're gonna have some fun with it. But it's just, you know, make sure you know you're stretching doing all things to prepare accordingly.
Man, about a year ago I blew out my knee, so I'm just now really getting back into basketball shape. Here's what I'm gonna say. There is no world in which I am the best hooper, or even close to the best hooper in Memphis media. What I am, though, I'm the best glue guy out there. I'm the best glue guy out there. You need somebody to play some defense? Call me. You need somebody to grab a rebound? I'm your guy. I'm your guy. So I'm just saying, when we're selecting teams, I'm going to help you win.
That's good to know.
I'm going to help you win. My team, stay on the court. Ask Gabe Kuhn. He can't beat me. He can't beat me. His big ass also likes to stay out there at the three-point line. Get in the paint, Gabe. You're 6'5". Get in the paint. Get in the paint. But moving on to the Memphis Grizzlies, they had a split weekend, and I think a big conversation about the Grizzlies right now is that they have been 10-2 in their last 12 games, that it's a great run for the Memphis Grizzlies. They've taken care of business against the bad teams. But what we have seen from the Grizzlies this season is they have had a tendency to struggle a little bit against teams above 500. Are you concerned about this trend with the Grizzlies in the early season?
It's still too soon. No. I mean, they beat the Celtics on the road. I mean, that's got to count for something, you know?
Right.
It's up and down. You know, I think right now, when you want to point more towards the Lakers, I think the thing is they have to figure out why that team specifically is a tough matchup for them. That's more of a problem than I think problems against upper-tier competition. The Mavs game, they were the better team for majority of three quarters. You know, they got in foul trouble early in the fourth, and they just – you know, let that game get away from them. But the first three quarters of the game against Dallas, they played their brand of basketball, and I think there should be confidence in knowing that you can play your brand like that against Dallas and be in the game. So I don't think, you know, even in the losses, they haven't really been dominated. I mean, the Lakers game, that was a wire-to-wire loss, only the second one this season for Memphis, so that was a little weird to watch. But they just got to figure out, to me, how to overcome what the Lakers, you know, are doing. And there are some signs of how it works. Like, for example, Zach Edey in both losses against the Lakers was a plus 12. You know, not to get too much into coaching decisions right now, because I still think we're still in small sample size category here. But after that first game in Los Angeles, where we saw Zach Edey play so well, and given this was his first game back, and we saw Jay Huff, quite frankly, not look good. You know, right. He started that first game, and they basically went away from him, and he didn't play much more for the rest of the game. I wondered if Taylor Jenkins would just stick to his normal rotations, which would be Brandon Clark starting Jay Huff, the first big off the bench, and then turn to Zach Edey, or would he go to Zach Edey sooner? And he stuck with it. And then, of course, they got off to a slow start. Zach Edey ends up starting the second half, just like he did in that first matchup. And they kind of, you know, fared better. So I think they're starting to get a better idea with Zach Edey in terms of how they can handle the Lakers, because that's more of a problem to me in the whole upper-tier competition. We're going to learn a lot about this team in the next couple of weeks in terms of how they fare against the best teams.
Absolutely. And one guy that we have seen struggling a little bit this season for the Memphis Grizzlies, who I'm not, to be honest, really concerned about yet, it is Desmond Bane. We've seen a few signs of old Bane appearing. He showed up in the fourth quarter against the Boston Celtics when it mattered. He had a pretty good game against the Brooklyn Nets, but he's been a hot topic on social media and in Grizz fandom recently. Do you think that what we've seen from Desmond Bane is a symptom of the new offense, injuries he's been fighting, or is it just simply an outlier slump that he's been in the first quarter of the season?
I think it's part of both of those things, but I think it's the new offense is the bigger portion of the pie here, because speaking of portions of the pie, the new offense kind of, you know, evenly distributes things a little bit more than in the past, where last season, for example, we saw that little stretch where Ja, Dez, and Jaren played together. There was like five games in a row where each of those guys reached 20 points. Like, it was incredible. There was a stretch there like early – yeah, it was like right when Ja got back. It was like five, six games in a row where Ja, Dez, and Jaren all reached 20 points. But this offense is different. It's not just Ja, Dez, and Jaren carrying the load. You know, you have Santi Aldama averaging double figures off the bench. You have Zach Edey, you know, averaging double figures. You got Brandon Clark starting to find his way. You got Scottie Pippen Jr., you know, doing the work that he's been doing. Marcus Smart. There's so many hands in this thing. Jalen Wells as well. You know, if I keep naming names, we'll keep going for a while.
Right.
But there's so many guys involved, you know, in this thing. And I think it's becoming a more traditional look for them now, whereas you think of whatever big three that comes to mind in your head. The third guy is usually the player who sacrifices the most. You know, if you go back to the Miami Heat big three, right? If you go back to that one, you think about what LeBron James was doing and Dwayne Wade, their stats were still not too far off of what they were doing before that. The big difference was Chris Bosh, who didn't get as many touches, and his stats, you know, dropped considerably. So that's kind of what you see sometimes with big threes. But Desmond Bane, I do think there is some slumpage in there because the efficiency is not where it needs to be. But at the same time, I'm not going to blame the slump, this on a slump, when he's only taken eight shots. I mean, he took eight shots against the Lakers and 2 3-pointers. Desmond Bane should never take less than, what I'd say, less than four 3-pointers right in a game. He is, to me, you know, your most effective 3-point shooter, because he's the guy who can create his own 3-point shot. He can knock down the open ones. He can come off a screen, pick and pop, and whatever, however you want him to do it. He can knock down the 3-point shot. So he gives you that. And a lot of, even some of the other good shooters on the Grizzlies, they don't have that versatility as a shooter that he has. So he shouldn't be taking 2 3-point shots, which I think is more indicative of his role in the offense.
Yeah, you know, in this season, a lot of people have been bringing up the Grizzlies' three-point percentage. It's about middle in the league, so it's not terrible by any means, but I do think that we're going to see it improve as somebody like Desmond Bane finds his level. He is a career 38% shooter since he's been in college, so I just expect that to come back into form. But to your point, I do wonder if he is trying to figure out his place within that big three right now, because there's no secret about it. Ja, Jaren, and Bane have not played a lot of basketball together on the court the last few seasons. So when Ja and Jaren are back in there, Bane isn't going to be taking as many shots. So he's got to find his spots. So I do think that that is part of what is going on right now with him. But I just expect him to be able to put it back together. And if he's not giving you the production from the three-point line that you want right now, I will say what is underrated about Desmond Bane and under-talked about is his defensive play. Every single season, I think Desmond Bane has become a better perimeter defender. And that's why I still think it is very important for him to be out there with a guy like Ja Morant, because he can help him on the defensive end. I've seen a lot of people suggest him come off the bench. I don't think that that needs to be an option for Desmond Bane right now at all. Now, staggering him a little bit with that second unit might be the way to go, but I do think that his defense needs to be discussed a little bit more, because when you look at percentages and, you know, shots against him, he's at the top of the league of perimeter defenders in the NBA.
Yeah, that's why, you know, the Lakers game, he shot 3 of 8 and, you know, only had 7 points or whatever the case, maybe seven rebounds, 7 assists. But I can't, like, it's not in my DNA to overreact to that one game.
Right.
When, if you go back to the last 4 games before that, like, again, once you set it in your brain that he is the third option, this is not Desmond Bane of the past that's averaging 23 points a game. Like, this is the Ja and Jaren, and they're not even playing those type of minutes. But that's a whole other thing. But you go to his last 4 games in Dallas, 19 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
8 of 14 shooting from the field. 6 of 10 shooting against the Kings after that, 18 points. Had 14 points against Boston, did some work late in that game with the three-pointer that he made and got to the basket, like 5 real big points to help put that game away late. The Brooklyn game, I thought he was really good.
Yep.
21 points, 8 assists, and not just that, as you mentioned on the defensive end. You remember who was guarding Cam Johnson, who was the one staying attached to him and keeping the ball out of his hands so he couldn't get any easy three-point looks? It was Desmond Bane. Yeah, like, he was the guy that handled Cam Johnson for the majority of that matchup, and then he goes against the Lakers and only takes 8 shots, only takes 2 three-point attempts, and – you know, doesn't score as well, but if you look at the overall box, you're talking about a guy who had 7 assists, 7 boards. You're talking about a guy who's had at least 7 assists in 3 of the last 4 games. Like, this is not a player where we're talking about, oh, if he's not shooting it, he's toast. Like, there's no impact there. You mentioned him competing on the defensive end. I'll mention the playmaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he has been, you know, decent in those areas. And, you know, in a game where, you know, Ja Morant didn't play great as well. Like, Ja had, I think, seven turnovers against the Lakers. Dez wasn't shooting as well. Dez didn't end up with 20-plus points like Ja, 21 points. But Dez only had 1 turnover. So, you know, this isn't the best version of Desmond Bane. I can say that. But at the same time, I do not think it's as bad as people are making it out to be, because he's one, finding other ways to be effective, and then two, he'll find his way in this offense as time goes on.
Right. I'm in total agreement with you. When you look at his last 10 games, I think that people are just getting hyper-focused on the shooting, which, listen, I understand. Scoring points in the mm-hmm. NBA is a big deal, and Desmond Bane, a lot of people would say his three-point shooting is his most important asset. But he, right now, in his last 10 games, 12 points a game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal. He is finding ways to be productive for the Memphis Grizzlies outside of scoring the basketball. And, like, one more time, they are 10-2 in the last 12 games. 10-2. It is very hard to do that in the NBA. Has it been against teams that are mostly below 500? Sure. Or floating around 500? Sure. But good basketball teams beat bad basketball teams. It's that simple. We don't have to overreact to everything. I agree with you. That Lakers game, they just played poorly. They just played poorly in that game. It mm-hmm. wasn't about rotations. They just couldn't knock down shots, and it's going to happen. Now, is it a little worrisome that the Lakers have their number a little bit? Sure, but the home team has also won every single game in that series this season, and I do think that we have learned a lesson that Zach Edey might be able to help out the Memphis Grizzlies next time they see the Lakers. So I'm curious to see what that rotation is going to look like the next time we see the Lakers. But I do want to jump to Jaren Jackson Jr., because you've written a lot about him this season. You've done a tremendous job. He has taken a significant leap in the last 2 years for the Memphis Grizzlies. I've been going through the stats the last few weeks on the show, and every single time I find something about Jaren, I'm basically blown away. He is once more one of the most effective defenders in the NBA, but he has really turned into an ISO bucket, and he is one of the best scorers in the NBA now at the big man position. That little left-handed floater he has in the paint, it's automatic right now, and that's why I want to ask you this question. I know that John Morant is the Grizzlies' best player. Some would argue he's the best player they've ever had. But is Jaren Jackson Jr. the most important Grizzly for where this team can go this season?
Oh, man. I'll say this. Ja's still the most important player for where the Grizzlies can go this season. But there are certain stretches of the game where it's becoming clear that Jaren might be the best option. You know, Jaren is now, to me, he's your Grizzlies' run stopper. He's that guy, when a team's going on an 8-0 run on you, get Jaren the ball, he's going to either score or get fouled, and you can hush the road crowd or whatever the case may be. He's your defensive force. He's always been that. But he is becoming, you know, I guess you could say in the same conversation from a value standpoint of what Ja brings. Which is significant to me because I always, you know, Ja's always been the guy to me. But Jaren Jackson Jr. has entered that conversation. You know, I think it was more of a question of Jaren or Dez being the second guy at one point. It's not a question anymore. But now it's Jaren and Ja kind of elevated themselves both to, you know, I think pretty much on par to be All-Stars this year. It's only 12 spots in the West. That's a whole other thing. But, I think he's right there with Ja. I wouldn't say he's more valuable because of, you know, what Ja just does as a playmaker, unlocking so many things for these players. Like, Brandon Clark gets so many easy shots because of him, you know, with the alley-oops at the rim. So many players get easy open layups. Everyone I talk to around the Grizzlies, on the Grizzlies, they all talk about how the team, the speed they play at when Ja Morant is on the floor, that is the emphasis for this team, you know, pace. But when Ja's on the floor, it goes that much quicker, and they can get into what they want to do that much easier. So Ja is still numero uno from that standpoint to me. But we talked a lot about it, you know, you've heard these conversations as well, about how the half-court offense and the development of that is a big key to where this Grizzlies team can go. Mm-hmm. Based off what we've seen this season, Ja Morant is not the biggest answer to the half-court questions. Desmond Bane is not the biggest answer. It's Jaren Jackson Jr. He is the guy right now. You talked about an isolation bucket. Ranks in the 75th percentile in the NBA in isolation scoring by NBA's tracking data. Ja Morant is in the 27th percentile. Desmond Bane is in the 38th percentile for isolation scoring. So Desmond Bane is the one guy who's pretty much in the upper tier. I mean, not Desmond Bane, excuse me. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the one guy who's in the upper tier of the NBA, and that's nothing new. He ranked there last season. He ranked the year before that. I believe he was well over 80%, just wasn't getting the same amount of touches that he's getting now. So his value is being shown in other ways. I still think, you know, when you talk about four quarters, the guy who's going to maximize the Grizzlies the most, it's still Ja Morant. But there are certain components to the Grizzlies. Like, without Jaren Jackson Jr., your half-court offense, to me, is probably bad.
Yeah, he's kind of been a, when it's getting tough, throw it to Jaren, he's going to be able to make something happen because he can score at all three levels. And that three-point shot, we've seen some more consistency with it the last few games, and I do think that it is opening up his paint game because teams have to step out on him, bigs have to step out on him, and Jaren is so quick, and he has such a good left-hand dribble that he's able to get around people no problem at all. And then you mentioned Brandon Clark. Him playing with Jaren Jackson Jr. has allowed Jaren on the defensive end to become that floater, that almost a spy on the defensive end, and he is swatting, and basically if a guy goes up against Jaren at the rim, I am expecting Jaren to block it almost every single time. BC, I will say, next time you watch a game, he's my favorite Grizzly player to watch when he's in there with Ja Morant because he always has his hands up. He is always ready to catch a pass. And his chemistry with Ja and Jaren has been so important to the success of the Memphis Grizzlies this season.
I'm telling you, man, people have kind of like just bought into just talking so much about the Jaren and BC dynamic. The Ja and BC one is, to me, just as important. I mean – Ja Morant elevates his game, and he elevates Ja Morant's playmaking, because BC is the best rim runner on the Grizzlies right now. And when he is coming off the screen and he's rolling to the rim, defenses have no choice but to honor that, because Ja Morant is going to throw it if you don't honor it. And when defenses honor that, they're usually bringing the help side defender, you know, from the weak side to come down. And Ja's either going to kick that to the corner, he's going to drive further into the paint and make that defender make a decision, or he's going to throw the alley-oop if that defender doesn't commit to Brandon Clark. So it makes his game much easier, whereas some of the other bigs aren't as effective in that role, even though all of them, you know, do it. But he is the most effective in that role. So we talk a lot about Jaren and BC, and rightfully so, but Ja and BC, they work really well together. I mean, they came in the same draft. They got 6 years of experience together, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Brandon Clark had that alley-oop against Boston, I almost started crying, because I was like, BC is back. BC is back in a big way. And to your point, that man right now around the rim is shooting 83%. If you get Brandon Clark the ball around the rim, it's going in. DeMichael Cole, thank you so much for spending time with me.
I appreciate you, Connor.
That was DeMichael Cole. He is the beat reporter for the Memphis Grizzlies, for the Commercial Appeal, and co-host of Locked On Grizz. You can find him on Twitter at DeMichael C. Does some of the best work in the city. Highly recommend a follow. Highly recommend making sure you're subscribed to the Commercial Appeal so you can see everything DeMichael does. When we come back, we got to wrap up the show. You're listening to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. George, if it's okay with you, we're going to spend the last few moments on the show making fun of the New York Yankees. Stop me if you've heard this before. Not a fan of the Yankees. First off, saw this very funny stat today. There's a chart floating around on social media. Highly recommend going to look it up. Of the records in baseball the last 10 seasons, no surprise to anyone, the AL East is without a doubt the best in baseball. It's not even close. I think four of the five teams were above 500 the last 10 seasons. You know, World Series appearances, playoff appearances, all those things, AL East. At the top of the AL East was something that I found very funny. It's not surprising, but it is very funny. The New York Yankees were, without a doubt, the best record in the AL East in the last 10 years. Best record in baseball the last 10 years, actually. The best record in baseball. George, for the listeners out there, can you tell me how many World Series rings the New York Yankees have had since 2010?
I feel like it's just as good if I don't answer.
Just as good, yeah. So is it, you know, the Yankees lose, as always. That answer is zero. Best record in the regular season. Great, good. How about them playoffs, Yankees fans? Zero.
Goose egg.
Zero. Now, today, the second thing we're going to make fun of the Yankees for is actually a really good move. I think it's a great move.
Makes sense.
Bellinger makes a lot of sense for them. They need help at first base. Bellinger's going to hit 1,000 home runs in that ballpark. It's going to be crazy. 2019 MVP. Bellinger's still young, talented baseball player. I think his name holds more weight than his actual play nowadays, but I still think it's a good pickup.
He was solid for the Cubs.
He was solid. He was solid. For the Cubs. I still think he's a really good pickup for the Yankees, and it does strike a little bit of fear into me. But then the news came out of what the New York Yankees have done. We talk about team chemistry a lot. It's been a big conversation with the Yankees the last few days because Juan Soto walked. And there were rumors that he did not like his teammates on the Yankees. He was upset with their security. He was upset with guys like Aaron Judge because of his performance in the playoffs. He felt like they couldn't get it done there. And that is why he has a record-breaking contract with the New York Mets. So, in response to that, the Yankees went out and got Bellinger. Now, here's the issue. Their other best player is Stanton.
Big G.
Stanton's ex-wife. Guess who she is married to? Cody Bellinger. Oh. So even when the Yankees win, they somehow still lose. Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I hope it's a dumpster fire for them. It's not going to be. They're going to be really good next year. They've got great pitching. Their lineup still strikes the fear of God into me. But man, there is just a little bit of hope for all of us out there that hate the New York Yankees, that little seed is going to cause doubt in that locker room. Only if we can get lucky, George. Only if we can get lucky. But that's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank my guests, Christian Fowler, Jeff Calkins, and DeMichael Cole. We will be back at the same time, same place tomorrow We're going to have a surprise in studio. Rhodes men's basketball coach Zoe Goodson is going to join me live in studio tomorrow. Make sure you're tuned in for that. For the Honorable King George, I'm Connor. Peace.